In 1992, a 12-year-long civil war came to an end in El Salvador. As part of the peace accords, the FMLN guerrillas were officially recognized as a political party, and the military was greatly downsized.
But a decade after the agreement was signed, some in this small Central American country say the root causes of the war have not been addressed. Chris Lehman reports from San Salvador.
It's a typical weekday afternoon in the newsroom of ARPAS, and Margarita Diaz is preparing several stories for the evening newscast. ARPAS is a network of community radio stations, and Diaz hosts a nightly newscast using material she's gathered, along with reports from affiliate stations. On this day, she's paying close attention to the heavy rain pounding the already soaked hillsides of San Salvador. If the deluge keeps up, mudslides and displaced families may be the lead story.
Esta es la señal que marca el contacto para la red informativa de ARPAS.
The news business has changed over the years in El Salvador. Journalists, by and large, practice their trade without fear of repression, and stories on guerrilla movements and right-wing death squads no longer dominate the headlines. Diaz says the only problem she runs into as a reporter is when sources she contacts associate her with the political left.
A lot of times when we're trying to have an interview or appointment with a public functionary and we say that we're from ARPAS, they associate us with the community radios, and they associate the community radios with the left wing, and so they might not respond to our calls, or if we call them to an interview or something, they might not show up, or they'll just sort of generally ignore us.
But being ignored is a problem sometimes faced by journalists the world over. Freedom of the press enjoyed a comeback in El Salvador, and the journalists of ARPAS are eager to cover issues affecting their listeners. Issues such as land distribution, a proposed free trade agreement with the United States, and the phasing in of the U.S. dollar as the nation's official currency. It's not just the press that has seen greater freedom since the 1992 peace accords. Many Salvadorans, as well as international observers, say the right to political expression has generally returned in the nation of 6.3 million people. Miranda Buffum is the assistant program coordinator for CRISPAS, a human rights organization that's been active in El Salvador since 1984.
You can be very open about what you say in public about not just about politics, but about social work, justice work, peace work, whereas during the war those were equated with terrorism or communism or being associated with the guerrillas.
While it wasn't part of the peace agreement, the 12-year civil war served in some way to elevate the role of women and women's rights. That's according to Nancy Meyerhofer, a Franciscan nun from Dubuque, Iowa. She works in a trauma clinic in the town of Suchitoto.
The women's consciousness came from the fact, at least in part, because every fourth guerrilla was a woman. And in the war, they were nurses, they were cooks, they were handling the radio, they were combatants, they were bodyguards. And they found out that they were important and that they were needed. And then after the war, they didn't want to go back and be second-class citizens.
But through her work at the clinic, Meyerhofer has seen another side of the war's aftermath: increased rates of alcoholism, suicide, depression, and domestic violence. She says help for those who have experienced extreme physical and emotional trauma is hard to come by, especially in rural areas. Meyerhofer says she's afraid that if the trauma isn't properly dealt with, it will be repeated.
I'm not a biblical exegete, but maybe that's part of what they mean in the Bible when they say that up to the seventh generation, the children pay for the sins of the parents. It's not sins, but it's what they lived.
U.S. President George W. Bush called El Salvador one of the bright lights of the region during a visit there in March. But the country has had its share of problems. A pair of major earthquakes in 2001 left nearly 1,200 people dead and more than 8,000 injured. Almost 150,000 houses were destroyed in a nation roughly the size of Massachusetts. Street crime is a major problem in El Salvador, as well as kidnapping and extortion. The country has one of the highest murder rates in Latin America. Some blame the United States for deporting Salvadoran gang members from places like Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., but the problem may be larger than that. Rodolfo Hernandez is coordinator of the Pastoral Center at the University of Central America in San Salvador. He says the nation's young people are suffering from a crisis of values.
One of the phenomena that didn't exist during the war are the bar and nude show places that, well, maybe they existed during the war, but they were very clandestine, and now they're legalized.
Long term, what effect will this have on the development of future leaders of this country?
It's not all the youth that go to these kind of places. You know, a lot of them, it's expensive to get inside. And I think there's a lot more social consciousness than there was before. So I think that, you know, and if these places continue to go on and continue to grow, I think it's very possible that there will be a reaction in the future to pressure to close them down.
At the Salvadoran Association of Cultural Workers, or ASTAC, Carlos Osegueda sings what many call the unofficial national anthem of El Salvador. The Salvadoran people's dignity is so high they wear the sky for a hat, goes the first line of Sombrero Azul, written by the late Venezuelan poet Ali Primera. ASTAC was formed out of the social movement during the early years of the war. Today, the organization holds workshops on things like music, painting, theater, dance, and literature. Alvaro Cermeño says the programs are a way for youth to get in touch with their culture.
Also, things like rescuing or conserving the environment, children's rights, women's rights, citizens' rights, these themes can be expressed through this art.
High in the verdant mountains in the province of Morazan lies the community of Segunda Montes. It's named for one of the six Jesuit priests assassinated at the University of Central America in 1989. Many of the residents lived for years in refugee camps just across the border in Honduras before returning near the end of the war to establish their village. In the midst of a downpour, a band of musicians gives a concert to a group of visitors. Grupo Morazan has been performing together for more than a decade, starting when its members were in their early teens and living in a refugee camp. Since then, they've toured Europe and the United States and have helped start a music school for members of their community. 25-year-old Adonai Hernandez Perez plays in Grupo Morazan and teaches guitar in the school.
Music is like a way of healing. It's like a therapy. As you know, this area of Morazan, the north of Morazan, was a very conflictive area during the war. And so it's a way for people to help to express themselves and to remember and to express what happened.
Perez says Grupo Morazan's songs have taken a new turn in recent years. Instead of just looking back at events surrounding the war, the group now includes songs about women's rights, the environment, and AIDS.
No son cuentos, ¿verdad? Son cosas vividas.
These are things that are important. These are things that aren't just stories. They're things that are lived here. And, for example, AIDS is a worldwide problem, and now it's here. And so we have this song that's, you know, really lively and has a great rhythm, but if you pay attention, it has a big message, also a very important message.
The long battle of the FMLN guerrillas to gain political recognition and other basic freedoms attracted the attention of human rights activists around the world. After the signing of the peace accords, some supporters of the guerrilla movement were afraid that international attention would fade right when it was possibly needed the most. Leslie Schuld came to El Salvador from the United States just after the war ended and became involved with the Center for Exchange and Solidarity, an organization that promotes grassroots organizing. She says it turns out that the ease of travel and relative safety in the post-war years have attracted far more international delegations than during the war, and Schuld says most of the visitors end up learning from the Salvadorans.
You see the Salvadoran people struggling against all odds, so I think people coming down here, their minds are open, their hearts are opened, and at the same time the Salvadoran people grow from that situation. They learn about other struggles in the world, and they also don't feel so alone against the obstacles that they're facing, knowing that other people are concerned about their situation. So it's a mutual solidarity and accompaniment.
But with a steady stream of international visitors and dozens of foreign aid organizations working in El Salvador, some workers are trying to avoid creating a culture of assistance dependency, that is, the expectation of receiving aid on a continual basis. Jeff Herzog is the El Salvador director for Voices on the Border, a Washington, D.C.-based organization that's been active in El Salvador since 1987.
For me, success is gauged not so much by the victories that communities have to get the state to respond, but by the fact that people and communities embark in this process and begin to take note that they can't just wait for things to be given to them, that they need to become subjects of history that participate and not just sit around waiting as objects for someone to take action that somehow affects them, but to make action happen.
Worshippers at the Sunday morning mass at the Chapel of the Divine Providence Hospital spill out onto the sidewalk. On March 24, 1980, Archbishop Oscar Romero was assassinated here while preparing communion. A 1992 UN Truth Commission concluded that a former Salvadoran army general was behind the assassination, but no one was ever prosecuted for the incident. 22 years after his death, the Nobel Peace Prize winner's image is present throughout the country on posters, murals, and monuments. Miranda Buffum of the human rights organization CRISPA says nearly everyone knows who he is.
It's incredible. If you go back and read his homilies, it relates incredibly well to the situation of today.
Romero's homilies were broadcast on the radio, and he's often depicted behind a microphone. Many of the posters with his picture include a quotation, such as this one on a poster produced by CRISPAS.
Romero said on the 12th of August of 1979, "Este es el gran mal de El Salvador, la riqueza, la propiedad privada como un absoluto intocable," which means this is the great evil of El Salvador, wealth and private property as absolutely untouchable.
Buffum and other human rights workers say the current peace in El Salvador won't continue if something doesn't change. They say the country's high crime rate is preventing people from enjoying a truly peaceful life. They say promised land reforms haven't come to fruition and that the electoral process still favors the ruling party. And they're concerned about the proposed Central American Free Trade Agreement and its effect on the country's working class. But the days of armed conflict and brutal death squads are gone, and that's something they hope doesn't change anytime soon. For Common Ground, I'm Chris Lehman in San Salvador.